This is Weather Brains, the show all about weather. This is James Spann hosting the program for tonight, and we have the usual suspects on here with us. This time I'd like to welcome the legendary J.B. Elliott. J.B., how are you?
Doing good. Doing better.
Good. So if you're doing better, that means you were doing worse at some point.
Just semi-worse.
Okay. Well, good. Well, it's good to have you with us. We got Brian Peters on the line here. Brian, what you up to tonight?
As little as possible after a long weekend of filling in.
Whose connectivity are you stealing tonight? Your neighbors or Starbucks, or where are you?
I'm at home.
Oh, okay. So you're actually paying for this bandwidth you're using, huh?
I'm paying for this bandwidth, yes.
Stealing it from the neighbors.
Yeah, and that's the golden tones of Kevin Silly from Dallas. Kevin, what's up out there?
Hey, I'm sorry I missed last week. I wasn't feeling too well, but I really, you know, I hate an opportunity, or I hate to miss an opportunity to give the AMS a hard time, and so maybe we can comment on that later. I know you guys had a rousing discussion about that, and maybe it gives me a chance to bring up global dimming. Have you guys heard of global dimming yet?
Global dimming?
Yeah.
No.
I'll bring that up later. Yeah, it's very exciting.
I've been called...
Is going out?
I've been called a dimwit often, so maybe that's what that means. I don't know.
It's our brains that are dimming.
Well, then look, just what is it? I mean, come out with it here. Let's go for it.
Yeah, you've got it started, Kevin. So go with it.
Well, I was really sorry that I missed last week that I couldn't bring it up because I actually found it on the PBS program Nova, but I guess it's been around for a while. But the general theory is it's somewhat related to global warming. But you know, the global warming is based on we put all these greenhouse gases and CO2 and whatnot into the atmosphere, and then that's been trapping all the heat. Well, the global dimming is also related to putting pollutants in the atmosphere, and so the idea is pollutants other than CO2 gases are creating more condensation nuclei. And for people who don't know, cloud droplets, little water droplets, would condense on some particles in the atmosphere. A lot of times it's just things like sea salt or any particles. It could be smoke or something from a volcano or whatever. But the idea is if we're polluting, we're putting more particles into the atmosphere, which are acting as those condensation nuclei, which is creating more cloud cover, which in turn is filtering or dimming the incoming solar radiation. So if you understand that principle, now what we've got is because we're dimming the incoming radiation, dimming the sun, we're actually cutting back on the amount of global warming going on because not as much sun is coming in. So the new theory is that in the last, say, let's say 12 to 15 years, since about 1990, the theory is that we're cleaning up our pollutants, thereby creating less cloud cover, thereby the global warming now, because more radiation is coming in from the sun, will thereby increase. How's that for an explanation?
So you're saying we need to put more pollutants back in the air, huh?
Exactly right, or at least cut down on our cutting down of pollutants. So that's global dimming for anyone who wants to go and research that on the internet. So there you go.
Wow.
Last week was pretty interesting.
Mm. You learn a lot on this show, don't you?
Makes sense. Yeah, it makes sense. But there's some. I had some questions about how they gathered that data. One of the biggest ones is one of the ways they've been measuring this, which is really interesting, is for a number of years all over the world. And I wish I could remember off the top of my head what it was called, but the general principle is they have these big pans of water. They're several feet across, and the people that monitor these pans of water are required once a day to make sure there is an exact level of water in the pan. And then it's either daily or every couple of days they go out and measure and see how much water has evaporated from the pan. And they fill it back up to that set level and they measure the amount. And the theory was that there was less evaporation of the water in the pans because there was less incoming sunlight. But what I didn't understand, or one of them, was how they could just measure evaporation of water by incoming radiation, solar radiation. I mean, there's things like wind and that also would, you know, help in evaporation. And I didn't hear any discussion of that. That doesn't mean they weren't doing it. I was a little confused by that. So I'm now going to be on, while you guys get on your global warming soapbox, I'm going to get on the global dimming soapbox.
You just made yourself the chairman of the Global Dimming Committee of Weather Brains. So any breaking news on global dimming, please pass that along.
Change my business cards right now.
Yep. I also noticed on the global warming front, there was an Associated Press article that came out over the weekend, which indicated that, Cape Canaveral was going underwater. Did you guys see this?
No.
This is rising ocean levels. Many well-known United States coastal landmarks will be underwater. They had Cape Canaveral. They had, something to do with Virginia, one of the Civil War sites over there, all going underwater. And they quoted, I think, about five or six folks on that article. And then about a dozen climatologists came out, including some major state climatologists, including, I know, the climatologists from Florida and Alabama came out and said this is the most one-sided, insane article they've ever read. So that's very – well, we'll try and post some of that up on the Weather Brains website, but I've – The battle continues. But this show, we're not going to feature global warming this week. We're going to talk about the polygon warning. And you guys refresh my memory here. We did this topic, Kevin, what, about 6 months or a year ago?
Yeah, maybe March, something like that. I'd have to go back and check, but I will.
But I thought we would go ahead and revisit the subject since the Weather Service is about to formally go to a storm-specific type warning. And Brian Peters, you're our warning coordination meteorologist here. Kind of explain the nuts and bolts of this for the people that are just hearing it for the first time.
Are you sure you want me to do that?
Yes, I do.
Oh, now I'm the guy in the Associated Press article that went nationwide that wasn't too sure about this.
I know that you're the national expert on this, so you just kind of give us the little nuts and bolts, and then we're going to hear from a meteorologist in charge of a local weather service office for his thoughts on it.
Well, basically, the National Weather Service is going to issue warnings based on storms, not based on counties. That is, they're going to identify a storm, and the meteorologist or the computer will devise a polygon ahead of this storm, where it's moving, and will issue a warning for that polygon, which will be a much smaller subset of what used to be a county-based warning. And the idea is to reduce the alarm factor, reduce the size of the warnings, reduce the number of people who are, have to seek shelter, and hopefully get more response to warnings and reduce some of the false alarm statistics.
Yep. Well, having said that, let's go right to an interview that J.B. Elliott and I conducted with a local MIC here very recently. We're on the phone right now. We have Jim Stefikovich. Jim is the meteorologist in charge of the National Weather Service in Birmingham. And, Jim, thanks for taking the time to talk with us about these new polygon warnings. JB and I, we promise not to grill you too hard here.
Absolutely. Well, no, grill me as much as you want. This is neat stuff coming.
It really is. And I am a big proponent of this, and I think it's a wonderful thing. But first off, if you would, just kind of explain the concept for maybe the person that's just hearing this for the first time. What does this mean for the average person listening to us in terms of the warning process?
Well, James, I think a lot of people that have seen you on TV obviously have been seeing warnings in the polygon era for a long time. And basically, polygon means multi-sided warning. In the past, the Weather Service used to issue warnings based on counties, political boundaries. Now we're going to issue the warnings based on where we think the threat of severe weather is. So if anybody's kind of seen like the cone of a hurricane track and it expands a little degree of uncertainty, we're going to be doing the same thing now with severe thunderstorm, flash flood, and tornado warnings. But we're going to actually predict where we believe that threat of that specific event is going to be. So what it's going to do is going to reduce the false alarm for warning, say, an entire county or multiple counties, and we're just going to be able to pinpoint where within a county or a number of counties we think the threat of severe weather is going to actually occur.
Jim, how will this affect NOAA Weather Radio and its operation? A lot of people are asking about that.
Yeah, James, that's really not going to change. We're going to probably do a little bit more cutting of county into four sectors. So what you might hear on weather radio is a little bit more of the northern part of a county or the southern, eastern, or western half of the county. The weather radio transmitters are not set up to take into account the polygon. So those warnings will pretty much come the same, and the words were not going to change as well. We've been really doing polygon warnings for about 6 years here in Birmingham and across the nation. It's just going to become official October 1st for the entire country.
Let me bring in J.B. Elliott. Now, J.B., you worked for the Weather Service for 32 years. How do you view this change in the warning process from your perspective?
I'm in favor of becoming more precise with it. The only concern I have is it might possibly double the number of warnings. What do you think of that, Jim?
Well, I think, J.B., that's a distinct possibility. In the past, we would issue a warning, and then, as you both know, we follow it up with what's called severe weather statements, and that's right, to give you an update to the warning itself. And in the past, say, a warning would develop over the southern part of the county, a storm with a tornado in it, and then another storm in the northern part, we would just say there are two storms in the county in a follow-up statement. We can't do that any longer on October 1st. We're going to have two separate warnings, one for the northern storm and one for the southern storm. So absolutely, I do believe that we are going having cases where storms are developing rapidly, have multiple warnings in effect for one or more counties. But on the flip side of it, I think the potential to reduce the false alarming that we're doing by giving county-based warnings is also going to offset that. So I think the benefits outweigh the negatives there.
I agree on that. I sure hope that people are more geography-oriented now than they were back in the 60s and 50s when I was in the Weather Service, because I believe the Weather Service did a study about 1960 or 62 that showed that most people could not name the counties that joined their own county.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, and J.B., I don't know. I guess we'd have to do a survey to find out. I hope that's not the case, but the beauty of the polygon warnings is that if vendors start putting this over cell phones, if you spend the money to get this, you could potentially be warned based on if you're actually in that town or even on the street level. That's not to say that the tornado is actually going to hit that street, of course, but it's being able to pinpoint the highest threat of severe weather within a number of counties. And if you can afford the technology to get that, well, you'll be able to get it just about anywhere.
And, Jim, I guess on the Weather Service web products, these polygons will continue to be displayed. They have been on many of the products for a long time, but people can see it in graphic form online.
We can, James. One of the things we're working on as quickly as we can, and I will fully admit with the government, sometimes it goes slower than we'd like it to, but we obviously want to get the GIS type of information out to the public as quickly as we can so people can zoom in and out. And I know we're working on that. I don't know if that's going to be – it probably won't be ready October 1st. But, again, there will be software out there that, boy, you can plot these polygons and you can zoom in and out and you can know exactly where you're at. And it's going to be a huge benefit for, say, radio stations who can tell the public, people that are driving, you know, where the storm is located, where the threat is. And I think it also pinpoint it for you and JB, those in TV, as well.
Does this put any more workload on your staff of meteorologists in a local office for polygon warnings?
Not really, James, because, again, we've been doing it for quite some time, so that's really not going to be an issue. It might increase, you know, if you had a big event like the March 1st event that the Enterprise tornado and that affected us, or, of course, April 98 event. Something like that, of course, is going to increase the workload, but we make sure we have plenty of staffing to handle that. But what we will continue to do, and I'm personally believe in updating these warnings as quickly as possible. So we're going to issue warnings, and my goal is to make sure we have a fresh statement with an updated location of the storm and path of towns in that storm every 10 to 15 minutes.
Hey, that's great. Glad to hear that.
And Jim, one more question. Let's say you've got a derecho kind of thing, a big, you know, maybe a bow echo or something. You can still issue a warning for a whole county if appropriate, right?
Oh, absolutely, James. In fact, you know, if you get a heavy rain event, you'll probably still see that, especially with flash flood warnings. If you get a big line of storms or a big mass of rain over several counties, well, certainly that polygon will be for the entire county. And like you said, a big squall line that's 50, 100 miles long, we're definitely going to warn out well ahead of that and for an entire county. So there'll be situations, just like you mentioned, where an entire county will be warned.
Good deal. JB, anything else for Jim?
I believe that's all. I'm glad to hear all of that, and I'm really pulling for it to succeed, Jim.
Well, same here, and it's a partnership, as you well know, between us. We're not in competition. We're both in the business to save lives and property, and, boy, you know, people just need to pay attention. We live in a severe weather area, prone area of the nation that is prone for severe weather, and people need to stay on top of it.
Absolutely.
Again, thanks to Jim Stefkovich of the National Weather Service in Birmingham for talking with us. And here's the reason I'm for this, and I really hope it works. Here's the bottom line. Tornadoes are small. Counties are huge. And I think way too many people have been taking action that don't need to, and that leads to the cry wolf syndrome. And I'm hoping that once this whole thing is worked out, that it will help ease the false alarm ratio a bit, and just the Weather Service can be more specific. Like, we have been in television for years and years and years. I can get on there and say, you know, the tornado's awfully close to a barbecue joint or to a shopping center, and hopefully this will allow the Weather Service some freedom to do kind of the same thing. So JB was on there with the interview, so I guess, Kevin and Brian, what are your thoughts on this?
Go ahead, Brian.
Well,
he's trying to bite his lip, I can tell.
No, I think that some of the things that I've mentioned come across as being negative against what they're doing, and that is not the case at all. I think this is not a revolutionary thing. I think this is an evolutionary thing, and as Jim pointed out, it's been going on for 6 years. The National Weather Service, before I retired, began issuing basically on storms, but we issued for a county and then in the text tried to be specific about where the storm was going to be affecting and who it was going to be affecting. And that's kind of what bothers me about this is it all sounds like it's all new, and yet it really isn't. It's what they've been doing. And if you rely solely on weather radio, for example, for your warnings, you're not going to see a change because it's still going to come out and the alarms will be made based on the counties. And I think there's some big challenges, and you all talked about it a little bit, and that is when you base it on a storm, you may have large counties that have multiple storms going on. And, you know, James, you and I have in the past years disagreed a little bit about false alarms and about, you know, the cry wolf syndrome. I don't remember in April of 98 ever hearing anybody in Jefferson County, and we had an F5 tornado for those people who don't know. I don't remember anybody talking or saying that they were overwarned or that, you know, that there was too much warning. We issued a warning, a tornado warning for the county, and the county is a little over 900 square miles. The tornado only affected about 16 square miles. And yet nobody really complained about seeking shelter when you looked at the kind of destruction and 32 deaths. Nobody complained about that. Now, I'm all for bringing down the false alarm, bringing down the warnings to a reasonable area where people will take shelter. But take a county the size of Jefferson and issue two warnings for that county, one severe thunderstorm, one a tornado, and don't you have the ingredients for confusion, especially when you're the Weather Service and you don't have Weather Service TV. Now, you and I, James, on television, and Kevin also, we have the benefit of being able to point to and show maps and talk about this storm and the differences. The Weather Service doesn't have that, so communicating the text of the warning message is still going to be a substantial challenge.
James, let me ask you something. If there is a severe thunderstorm warning for Tuscaloosa County or a small part of Tuscaloosa County in the Polygon warning, will the entire Tuscaloosa County be painted yellow on the TV screen?
Yes. Now, I'm saying that, Brian. Our vendor for our map that displays those on the screen is Barron Services, and I would imagine that the whole county will be painted in, JB. I don't think there'll be any difference in that. And Brian, you might correct me if I'm wrong.
I have not seen anything from Barron Services yet. Of course, they can decode the polygon coordinates and plot that on a map. The Weather Service is doing that on their website. So that may be something they're working on, but I have not seen any newsletters or any information that indicates that. So I would expect that on October the 1st, when this all goes into effect, that it would still paint the entire county.
What are your thoughts, Kevin?
I would just echo a couple of things that have already been said. I think the, you know, the evolution comment is right on, and I give the Weather Service credit for that. You know, if Brian, like Brian said, if you want to just sit in your home and rely on your weather radio to pop off when your county is under a warning, you can continue with that. But the need for an evolution, I think the Weather Service knew that that had to evolve, especially to service the visual component of it. The weather radio is an audio component, but to service things like websites and all of the various websites that, that feed off of that data, they just really knew that they were going to have to evolve to something to service those products a little better. So I give them a lot of credit for taking the time. And, you know, there had to come a point where we had to say, okay, this is the way we do it now, which I guess, you know, is what's coming for October. But it's still going to be a slow evolution. So if a year or two from now you just want to continue to rely on your weather radio, you can do that. And I should reference, we did this on an earlier episode. As James mentioned, it was back in March. It was WeatherBrains episode 59. We had a nice chat with Mike Looney from the National Weather Service, who's one of the folks that has been spearheading this and guiding it through the implementation water. So, again, that's weatherbrains.com, and you can go back and look for episode 59. And by strange coincidence, I noticed that was the episode where we started the WeatherBrains online listener survey, which I don't think I ever mentioned. Did I mention
that? You've never mentioned that on this show, so why don't you go ahead and mention it one more time?
Thank you. There's a WeatherBrains online listener survey. You know, if you're interested, it's there at weatherbrains.com. I appreciate the chance to do that once.
Yep. And let me ask Brian this question. What will the difference be? You're right. I mean, this has been going on for a long time. And I think what brought all this attention here recently, I think the Associated Press did a story and then the newspapers picked on it. And I got this big influx of email from people, you know, asking about the change in the warning process. What will be the difference anybody will notice in this thing?
Well, I think that's going to depend on how you are receiving the warning. If you are receiving the warning via NOAA Weather Radio, for example, you're not going to notice a difference in the delivery. You may notice some difference in the wording. In the text of the message, I think when I talked to Jim last week, they're going to update and upgrade their GIS kind of stuff so that when they pick a polygon, it's going to try to label more communities, more landmarks. For example, in central Alabama, Lake Martin is a big lake, and if a thunderstorm is going over that, wouldn't it be nice to be able to mention so that boaters and recreational people would know that they're about to be impacted? And I think they're going to try to be doing that. So you may hear more details in locations, but you're still going to hear that it's for, you know, the north or central or east part of some county. So you're still going to hear that. If you're seeing things where there's a visual medium, like on the web or on television, you're going to be able to see those boxes and hopefully know where you are relative to where those polygons are and know whether you're at risk or not at risk. So it's going to depend a lot, James. And I'm concerned with any change, and one of the things I think this change is doing is the people who are very much into the web and computers and nav systems in their cars, you know, those people are going to really benefit from this as vendors take this on and use it. But then there are those people who can't afford all that high-tech stuff, and they're with their weather radio, and they're a little bit further behind. So I don't know. You know, it's there's a lot of variability in here.
All right, JB, you're the great Alabama national weather legend. What are your thoughts on this?
No, I'm going downhill. Something else that bothers me a bit, let's use Tuscaloosa County, for example, and for those out of state, Tuscaloosa is a large county, one of the largest counties in Alabama. And let's say a tornado touches down in the southwest corner of Tuscaloosa County, and there's a warning with the polygon and naming several communities. If that tornado takes a 10-degree right turn, by the time it gets to the northeast corner of Tuscaloosa County, it's going to require a number of revisions and added communities into the polygon. And I'm just worrying about that causing confusion. And I know here in Jefferson County, from the southwest tip of Jefferson County to the northeast corner near New Blunt in St. Clair County is 35 air miles.
Yep. And let me ask this question again. I hate to keep asking Brian, but he's the closest one to this on the whole panel, I think. How specific in these warnings will they be when it comes to referring to a county? Are they going to say Northeast, Jefferson County, Southwest, South Central? I mean, how specific will they be when it comes to the reference to a county here?
Well, you know, James, I'm not sure. I mean, we haven't issued any warnings under the new initiative. So I'm not sure. I when I was talking with Jim last week, he mentioned that they were going to be, you know, using more parts of counties. So I get, you know, that's something that also has been going on. That's why I say that I look upon this as an evolutionary change, not a revolution. There's no big change going on here. It's not something tremendously new. The Doppler radar system deployed in the early 90s has helped us to be more storm-based than we ever have been before. This is just the natural next evolutionary step to try to make the warnings more specific. And just like Kevin said, I applaud what the National Weather Service is doing. The job of communicating a severe storm, its impacts, and where it's headed to a broad population is a tremendous challenge. And I applaud their efforts. I just have some concerns about, you know, things like double warnings for counties and different warnings, like a tornado and a thunderstorm for different parts, and what that's going to do for confusion. And the confusion factor always worries me in a warning situation, because that means that people might not seek shelter. They might not do the right things if they're confused. And so the confusion factor worries me a little bit.
And JB, your concern when we talked with Jim Stefkovich was that many people don't know geography that well.
Yeah, the National Weather Service did a nationwide study on that. They contracted with some university to do it, and they were appalled at what they found.
But JB, what's your bottom line on this whole thing? Thumbs up, thumbs down?
I would have to say thumbs up, but I think it's going to take time. I think it will work, but I don't think it will work really, really good in the early stages. It'll take some practice. People are going to have to get used to listening more for specific towns and communities instead of counties. And I'm also concerned a bit about a polygon that straddles two counties.
Okay, fellas. Well, good deal. Well, again, if you have any comments on this whole polygon warning thing, just zip us an email. The address is question@weatherbrains.com. And now we got to break away for a Weather 101 with none other than Professor Peters.
Weather Brains 101 with Professor Peters.
Isaac Klein, the chief meteorologist on Galveston Island in 1900, knew from his close observation of the Gulf of Mexico and the sky that a hurricane was approaching. But he had no clue to the magnitude of the monstrous storm about to inundate the island. Today, we rely on weather satellites to watch developing tropical systems as they come off the African coast. The world's first meteorological satellite was launched from Cape Canaveral on April 1, 1960. No April Fool's joke, it was named TIROS for a Television Infrared Observation Satellite, and it demonstrated the advantage of mapping the Earth's cloud cover from high above the Earth. TIROS showed clouds banded and clustered in unexpected ways. Observations from below had not prepared meteorologists for the interpretation of cloud patterns that the view from space would show. TIROS was a polar orbiting satellite, and this type of satellite continues in use today. Currently in orbit, we have morning and afternoon satellites, which provide global coverage four times a day. The geostationary, or GOES, satellites were placed in orbit beginning in 1966. Unlike polar orbiting satellites, GOES satellites orbit at an altitude of 22,236 miles. At this distance, the satellite completes one orbit of the Earth in 24 hours, so it appears stationary relative to the Earth. Because they stay above a fixed spot on the Earth, they provide a constant vigil of cloud features over nearly half of the Earth, except for polar regions. Still, there are advantages and disadvantages to each kind of orbit. Polar orbiting satellites have a closer view of the Earth from an orbit of about 520 miles, so they provide detailed images and excellent views of polar regions. but polar orbiting satellites have a limited view in space and time. Geostationary orbits allow a view of half the globe from one satellite, can record images as fast as once a minute, and always have the same perspective, helpful in analyzing the motion of clouds. Their orbits, though, are so high that they provide less detail, and views of polar areas are restricted. If you have questions about weather terms or any weather item you'd like to hear about, send them to question@weatherbrains.com.
Hey, speaking of satellites, looking at the tropics, it looks like things are about to blossom out there. Any thoughts on what's going to happen out there in the tropics over the next week or so, fellas?
We're going to have some storms.
Yep. I think we're going to run some names here. We got Karen and Lorenzo and Melissa. And I bet you all three of those names will be assigned by the time we do another Weather Brains program. And you know where all of them are going, don't you? Galveston.
Galveston.
Thank you.
Look, you've already had Umberto, so you've had one out there. I mean, you were right, see?
Yeah. We want them all.
I understand.
Kevin, now don't get greedy because I was just looking. Dallas-Fort Worth is 18 inches ahead of normal on rain this year, and Houston has had almost 51 inches of rain.
Okay, you guys can have one or two.
Thank you.
Yes, especially since we're still 20 inches below normal in the desert southeast.
And by the way, we should mention late last week we had the little tropical depression number, what was it, 10?
10.
That never got the name Jerry. And then they gave Jerry, the name Jerry, to some system out there in the North Atlantic that had a...
It looks horrible.
Looked just awful. And I don't think that ever had a recon in that thing. Did they ever put a recon in that?
I don't think they fly that far out.
Okay.
That was one of our best names of the year, and we didn't get to use it but a few hours.
Some little storm that fizzled out there, but we've got, at the time we're doing this podcast here, we've got one that's coming into the Caribbean, another really good-looking wave. I mean, to me, it looks like a depression right now is out there.
That one looks good.
Yeah, in the eastern Atlantic, southwest of the Cape Verde Islands. So I would not be shocked if all three of those names were in play in the next week or so. So it's going to be very interesting to watch that. Hey, Bill Murray is not on with us live tonight, but we've got Bill with his This Week in Weather History segment.
Let's take a look back at some interesting weather history for the week of September 25th through October 1st. And it was back on September 26th, 1955, during the pre-dawn hours, U.S. Navy Neptune P2V3W took off from Jacksonville, Florida. Its mission was to obtain observations in dangerous Hurricane Janet in the Caribbean Sea. Crew of nine prepared their instruments and chatted with journalists from the Toronto Daily Star. Those newspaper journalists were given permission to fly along on the mission. At about 8:30 a.m., the crew reported their first set of observations by radio back to the National Hurricane Center. Commander G.B. Windham prepared to fly his aircraft into the eyewall at an altitude of 700 feet. Then no other communication was ever received from the flight. No trace of the aircraft or the 11 people aboard was ever found. We know now that the storm had deepened explosively, going from a Category 1 to a Category 4 hurricane in less than 24 hours. One thing that could have happened is that the plane's altimeter gave the pilots an incorrect reading because of the extremely low pressure, and that they simply flew the plane into the ocean. Reconnaissance planes now use a radar altimeter to prevent such a thing from happening. This is the only time that a reconnaissance aircraft was ever lost in an Atlantic hurricane. Now, it was back on September 26, 1999, that the East Carolina Pirates had had about all they could take from hurricanes. You see, Hurricane Floyd had flooded their Greenville, North Carolina campus and forced them to move their game with the ninth-ranked Miami Hurricanes to Raleigh, about 85 miles away. So they decided they would take it out on the heavily favored Hurricanes, upsetting them 27-23. And on September 28, 1874, the U.S. Signal Corps maps showed a hurricane in the Atlantic Ocean between Jacksonville and Savannah. It is quite possibly the first hurricane ever depicted on a weather map. And that's This Week in Weather History.
You know, it kind of sounded like Bill recorded that weather segment there in a bathroom somewhere, didn't it? Hope the guy in the stall next to him on that guy from Idaho, you know?
Uh-oh. That is,
just clean rating on iTunes.
Great. Any other tidbits here before we wrap it up for this week? JB, what's on your mind? It looks like starting to turn cold up in the Northern Rockies, isn't it?
Yeah, it was in the low 20s up in parts of that area this morning and in the teens in Alaska, and it's getting colder everywhere north of about St. Louis and Des Moines and Chicago, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, boy, you sent some great shots from one of our listeners out in Utah of fall colors out there.
Yeah, late in Utah.
Yep.
I have been to all of those locations taking photographs sent today.
All right, Kev, anything else on your mind in Big D?
Yeah, I'm going to jump on the AMS twice here.
Oh, go for it. They're going to kick us all out of this thing, so just go for it.
And that'd be okay at this point, because I'm really mad at Bob Ryan and the rest of those folks for writing that stuff that you talked about last week without contacting you first. I mean, just jumping up there and spouting off and nasty is just, there's just no call. At least give, the other person a chance to defend themselves or at least speak their piece, as you guys did, and said, hey, Bob, come on the show and let's talk about it. But they don't seem to be willing to do that. That's kind of cowardly. And if, in fact, Heidi Cullen is, which you mentioned a couple of weeks ago, is in fact running for president, I think we ought to all get behind her for president of the AMS, for the very reason that at that point, if she becomes the president, then I think she's going to get her comeuppance and realize that she won't be able to hide behind the skirt of her production company for her program and the Weather Channel when she gets herself in trouble like she did back in the spring. So I say Heidi for prez, and I'll stop.
Wow.
Wow.
Nice. I like it.
Holy
mackerel. This guy is loaded for big game.
He really is. This is going to be great. At some point, we're going to be kicked out of every professional society, and we'll be in trouble with everybody, so you might as well just air it out, So, Brian, what's on your mind here? I can't wait to hear this.
I don't know after that. that was great, Kevin.
I've been sick. I'm all riled up. So I'm angry. I got all this pent-up energy now.
Great.
Well, I do have a rant, James.
I love it. Come on, bring it. I knew it. I knew he had one. Go ahead.
I hate those daggum thermometers, those digital thermometers on the side of the road at the banks the whatevers.
Come on.
That show
Come on.
The time and the temperature, and the time is wrong, and the temperatures are wrong. That is just horrible. And I know the reason. They got thermometers on the roof over black tar, and it just promotes global warming.
I have a non-weather gripe.
Let's hear it, JB.
Why is all news now breaking news? And why is all of the national cable 24-hour news networks spending over half their time on celebrities?
They went into nonstop coverage on O.J., I think. I think they haven't gotten out of that yet, have they? All O.J. all the time?
No. It's all about drawing a crowd anymore, and they can't figure out how to draw a crowd on important stuff. So they just go for the gawkers and the rubberneckers, and that's how they draw a crowd. They don't care about the quality of the crowd and the quality of the information. It's just about drawing a crowd.
Yeah, what we need to do one week is just have one big rat hole. The whole 30-minute show, one rat hole, nothing to do with weather. We'll just be like a bunch of cranky old men and gripe about stuff. So.
Oh, we can complain about anything?
Sure.
I would love to. Let's do it.
We'll have a rat, maybe show 101. We'll do the big show 100 here in a few weeks, and then 101 will just be a big rat hole. How about that?
Yeah.
All right.
I think the show's going to be recorded.
Well, listen, if you've got anything you want to say on the show, the email address is question@weatherbrains.com. We've heard from a lot of people this week. We'd love to hear from you. Don't forget, if you're just listening to this on iTunes, we'll put some show notes up on the website, weatherbrains.com, and we'll be back next week with another riveting edition of Weather Brains. Thanks for listening. Have a wonderful week. On behalf of the Weather Brains crew, we do thank you. Have a wonderful week, and God bless.